everybody across the land. Here's a special from Sequel Cast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe you just gotta wait and see. 'Cause you're gonna find out after this theme. This Sequel Cast special is a go. This Sequel Cast special is a go. What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? What's it gonna be about? Who knows?
Hello and welcome to the Sequel Cast special. In this episode, we're taking a look at holiday films, films we've either watched growing up with our families, you know, in the months of November and December, or movies set around holiday, set across Christmas, Hanukkah, Thanksgiving, what have you, that we've enjoyed. I am Matt. With me is Thrasher.
Hello, everybody. A Merry Christmas, a crazy Kwanzaa, a Happy Hanukkah, a solemn and dignified Ramadan, and a tip-top Tet.
I have never met anyone that actually celebrates Kwanzaa.
Really?
Yep. Have you?
No. How do you mean that? Or do you just not ask?
You know, I guess I never ask. If I go to everyone I ever see on the street, do you celebrate Kwanzaa? Do you celebrate Kwanzaa? That might be a bit accusatory.
So I guess I guess we have firmly established that we are going to be talking about holiday
yep.
movies. Excellent.
If you like sequel,
are you distracted?
Oh, I'm just
by my
appearance? Yes. Your thick, curmudgeonly beard is. Dare I avert my eyes? No, I was putting a post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast, and you can check us out, of course, not only there, but at sequelcast.com, and check out, besides Sequelcast Special, which this one is right now on holidays. I should have a Santa hat, but I don't have one of those. But
well, yeah. Right now, I'm working on a full Alan Moore, but since we don't have a Santa hat, I can put on this tiny wig, which was made for my monkey.
That's delightful. And I have a little friend here, Neo from The Matrix.
My goodness. Does he know Kung Fu?
He knows Kung Fu. He doesn't know much about the holidays, but that's because they're all fabrications of the machines in The Matrix. So he doesn't think they exist in the first place.
For those of you only listening to the audio feed, what we're doing right now is hilarious.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Stuff that's in video doesn't play as much as it does on audio, or vice versa. So we're ostensibly talking about holiday films. When you think of, you know, the holidays, and we're talking about both you and I, Thrasher, are live in the United States, or from the United, you know, Americans, and real Americans. No, that's okay. That's a whole other topic with politics we're not getting into. What I'm trying to say here, listeners, is
movies with some connection to the festive celebrations
in,
which fall
in November,
within
and
November
December.
And December.
In your recollections of your growing up, is there something your family would get together to watch around Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever holidays your family celebrated in the wintry months?
Well, my family has three traditions. There are three traditional things that we watch. The first being The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, the Chuck Jones animated version.
Mm.
Cannot get enough of that.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Mr. Grinch, you're the king of sin, for sots. Oh, it's a fantastic. Everything about that is
now you got
is
two more things to mention that you always do with your family, but I want to stop for a second on Grinch Who Stole Christmas. Because
And talk about sponsors.
Not sponsors yet. There'll be time for that later. Plenty of time for that later on Sequel Cast Special.
Okay.
What do you think of the live-action Jim Carrey film from about a decade ago?
Never seen it. I am so primed to be disappointed that I've been avoiding it ever since it came out.
I see.
And the sad thing is, when I saw the original trailer, it actually looked promising. It's just the more bits and pieces of it I saw in advertising and the whole media and merchandising blitz that came with its release, I was sick of it by the time it actually hit theaters, and in coming years have wanted nothing to do with it. Even though it had the same guy who played Timmy in Passions as the young Grinch, I still don't want to see it.
I think part of the problem with that, and also with like the Cat in the Hat film they did, is you look at the Dr. Seuss books and the illustrations in there. The guy's real name is Theodore Geisel, by the way, if you don't know, listeners.
No, I think that was just the name he had until his true name of Dr. Seuss was revealed to the world.
Good point. But anyway, the visual style and the illustrations in his books are so distinctive that you try to have it with people, with costumes, and it just looks kind of like ghastly. It looks like furry porn or something.
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing because there have been I think it was like the Wubulous World of Dr. Seuss, which had puppets and sets designed by the Jim Henson Studios, showed that a lot of Dr. Seuss creations can work in three dimensions. But I guess it's once you have a person loaded with makeup, it is grotesque.
Yeah, and although they do some of the songs from the Grinch Who Stole Christmas TV special cartoon.
There's two songs.
Just two? People think there's more, though, isn't it? I mean...
Oh, wait, no. There's a third song. There's a song that the Who's sing when they decorate the trees.
The ones I can think of are "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." At the end, where all the Who's come together. Bahudore. What's the third?
They're like decorated the house, and it's, you know, like, throw up the lights and...
A bit of a bell.
I don't remember any of the lyrics, because half the things they mention are, like, made up.
Made up
sort of Seussian decorations. You know, throw up the walls with dingle blaps and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. That's,
And who's old fuzz and wazzle.
So you mentioned with your family, one of the things they did is watch Grinch Who Stole Christmas. What's another thing?
Well, between and we actually mentioned this when we talked about I think it was John Hughes when we did the Home Alone series. My mother and I always watch Planes, Trains.
I have never seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I really should
see it. It's
I like
a nice movie.
Steve Martin. I like John Candy.
Yeah, and the part we have to see, and if for whatever reason, like, I'm not in town long enough, or like time is just too tight, we at least watch the mess around sequence. We really crack up and bond over that.
Is that done to the Ray Charles song Mess Around?
Yeah. Steve Martin is asleep in the car, and John Candy is changing channels on the radio station, and comes across Ray Charles singing the Mess Around, and it's just physical comedy of John Candy pantomiming the song, and it's just really. It's such a nice moment, because I think whether we want to admit it or not, we all secretly have that song that we have to sing and dance and pantomime to.
Everybody's doing the mess around. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, and then he does like a little fake saxophone solo.
I don't know why I haven't seen it. It's just for whatever reason, growing up, my parents never rented it, and then on my own, I guess I just haven't said, well, you know, let's watch a John Hughes classic. But I really should. And if you like John Hughes movies, you can check out our sister show, The Sequel Cast. We did the Home Alone trilogy. You can check those out at sequelcast.com. Very good stuff. So what's the third thing your family tries to watch? You said Grinch Who Stole Christmas and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
And then the third, which, much to the protests of most of my family, except my brother and the morbidly curious, the MST3K episode with Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Now, this is a question I've had. You're a lot more familiar with Mystery Science Theater 3000 than I am. When they show the movies on that show, do they cut anything out of the movie for running time? Because they got the skits in between and the commercials.
Yeah. very, very often they do make cuts for length.
Yeah.
And in fact, Santa Claus
Butters.
Conquers the Martians. Santa Claus Conquers the Martians is one such movie. There's a handful of sort of expository scenes that are cut. But they're good about it. Typically, you don't notice. Although they have shown a handful of films which were so short, they had to come up with their own filler material, which is where sometimes the shorts before the movies came from. Or in the case of Gamera versus... It's not Gamera versus Zegra, and it's not Gamera versus Baragon. It's whichever one has the giant saw blade head monster.
Oh, yeah.
The movie's only about an hour long, so they had to fill up 2 hours of television, and so there's a running gag where they sing about four different versions of the Gamera theme song.
Well, and out of all the varied releases that, Rhino Video has released a lot of the Mystery
yep.
Science Theater stuff. Have they ever officially released the Mystery Science Theater Godzilla episodes? For rights reasons on video?
I actually don't know, because there are some complicated rights issues involving some
I think
of
Sony has
so I really
Sony
know.
Has a lot of them. I know on DVD, the past few years, they've done these sets where it's a two-disc set, where one is a DVD with the film with the English dub that often has footage cut out of it, and one is the original Japanese language version, which is a nice touch.
Oh, here's Gamera versus Gairon. That was the one where the main monster had a giant knife for
it. Did you see Godzilla Final War? Or Final Wars?
Yes, you actually showed it to me when
I'm
I visited
sorry.
You
I did.
To go with the accompany you to Dragon Con in 04.
That's right.
You
Holy
had
shit.
That.
Yeah. That's a.
Had a
yeah,
good
that's...
time. It would make a good holiday movie. It does take place partly at the South Pole, which is just like the North Pole.
Speaking of sequels and stuff, did you know they're doing a new American Godzilla film?
I choose not to know that.
It would have to be better than the one starring Matthew Broderick from the late 90s.
Yeah, it's amazing how you can mess that kind of thing up.
Well, Raymond Burr is dead. He was in Godzilla 84, but in the original...
Oh, he was in the American original.
Yeah, well put. Okay, so that's three themes your family have watched. I think I'll talk about three themes my family. What's so funny?
No, I just like we've spent more time talking about Godzilla than holiday movies, and then you're like, oh, there's your family.
There's your fucking family. No. I think in recent years, I've lived in Portland, Oregon since summer of 2006, and my dad lives around like Springfield, Oregon, and that sort of general area, Springfield, Eugene area. And my mom and my sister live in Atlanta, Georgia. So, I mean, it's off, and, since high school and stuff, my parents have been divorced and all that. So that complicates, make families bigger and have a lot of more siblings and all these sort of things. So, anyway,
well, you're not allowed to have Christmas if your parents are divorced.
That's not.
It's in the Constitution.
It's in the Constitution. Okay, I'll have to.
Yes.
Keep that in mind. I think I've.
Have you been committing a felony?
Felonies all of these years. I when your parents get divorced, I think you have to carry that "I'm a child of divorced parents" card with you at all times in your wallet.
It's a blue armband.
Armband. Some people choose to get the tattoos. So they don't have to wear the armband everywhere. The tattoo is the more expensive option, but longer lasting.
Congratulations, Matt, for making this the most fucked up Christmas episode of a podcast that's ever been.
But what
made.
I was trying to get at is I haven't sat down and watched the same holiday movies with family members year after year for Christmas or Thanksgiving in a while. But stuff I would used to watch often around the holidays, I can think of three. One is The Muppets Christmas Carol, which we talked about in our run of The Muppets over on SequelCast, and you can listen to those at SequelCast.com. This, of course, if you're just tuning in, is a SequelCast special on holiday movies. We have... we would watch that, and it Muppets Christmas Carol is something that's special to me, because... My sister and I, we moved down from Virginia, and up to that point, we lived in places every 2 years just because of my dad's job. And when my dad got a job in Georgia, we, you know, lived there for, in that house at least, you know, like 8 years or something. And then we went to college. We sort of stayed in the same general area, Marietta, Georgia, in the Atlanta suburbs for a very long time for us. And when we first moved to Georgia, it was around Christmas time. And what we caught at the theater was, you know, Disney's Aladdin and Muppet's Christmas Carol. In 92, I believe, is when those came out. So it's something that, you know, reminds me of that time moving to a new place and a place that became more of a permanent home than places where I'd lived before. We, meaning my sister, myself, my mom, my dad. And the Muppets Christmas Carol, I don't think holds up quite as well as some of the other ones, but Michael Caine's performance as Scrooge is fantastic. That's the thing I take away from that film. And what's bizarre is they just came out with Muppets Christmas Carol on Blu-ray. And that part's not weird, but what is when it came out on home video, and we talked about this in our Muppets Christmas Carol sequel cast episode, which you can check at sequelcast.com, is on the videotape and on the full screen version on the DVD release, it has a deleted scene of an extra song called, like, When Love Is Gone or something. Right? Where, like, yeah.
Yes, yes. With the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Yeah, where Scrooge is reminiscing on a love that sort of slipped through his fingers because of him wanting to be a superstar accountant or whatever. And on the Blu-ray version, it's just the widescreen version of the movie, which is the theatrical cut, which does not have that song, which many people consider sort of the heart of the film, despite the fact people didn't see it until it came out on video.
It really does improve the overall right. body of work.
And they cut that out of the theatrical version because test audiences, kids, were just getting restless during that scene. So, one of those interesting factoids for you there. So that's the first out of three things, my family. It's kind of holiday stuff I enjoy. Another one that we've watched an awful lot is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah. You know, my family has seen quite a bit of that as well. For whatever reason, I think we watched that more in the summer than we ever did around Christmas.
The very first time I saw Christmas Vacation, I was a little kid. I think my parents were staying up and watching it, and I was about to go to bed and just caught the opening credits. And the opening credits are sort of like a cartoon with an animated Santa getting electrocuted and stuff. And I was disappointed when the movie started because I'm like, hey, this isn't a cartoon.
Yeah, there's enough comedy going on with the misfortunes befalling Santa that you kind of want that to be more of a focus for the film.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like the opening credits of Pink Panther in that regard, where you get the panther going around and you're like, hey, there's no Pink Panther in this film, or there is, but it's not a feline, it's a diamond. So
it's symbolic.
That'd be fun to do on Sequel Cast, the Pink Panther movies. There's a shitload of those. My God, there's like...
Yeah, I'm not sure if we'd survive.
That might kill us.
Especially if it stretches into the era, the non-anyone-we-liked in that role.
I think you'd
era.
Have to go to that there's level. Really, I mean, that's like at least eight movies or something. You got this Steve Martin.
And are we going to include A Shot in the Dark in that?
Yeah, and there was one called Inspector Clouseau that starred like Alan Arkin or something as... That's a very weird...
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a separate topic. The third thing around the holidays that's sort of a recent favorite of mine is Bad Santa. I've only got this for the first time.
You told me stories about that movie and working in a Blockbuster.
Yeah. When I worked at Blockbuster Video for a few years on and off through high school and college during the summer breaks, and people would get Bad Santa all the time for their kids, even though it says in the big thing on there, rated R, but they'd get it because, you know, oh, it has Santa in the title. Even though Santa Claus...
And the box... Doesn't the box cover show, like, a drunken
yeah.
Santa with a bottle
of whiskey?
He
has a bottle of whiskey, and there's, like, women with big tits on either side of him dressed up like elves or something.
If we're going to have to go through the bullshit of having a film's ratings board, people might as well use it.
Well, but you can, on the other end, you can see, you know, like, a kid convincing their mom to rent a movie before they're ready to watch, before, you know, it's appropriate for them to watch it.
Well, then the parent is kind of not living up to their responsibility.
Mama, can I watch Bad Santa, Mama? Please, Santa Claus, he's so bad, it's funny. I love it. It's good. He makes a thing out of wood that looks like a poop.
Is that the actual representative of the content of the film?
Have you seen Bad Santa?
Oh, no,
you should.
No,
I think you'd really like it. It's a dark comedy. It's, if you're going to catch it, it's sort of confusing because there's three different cuts of this on video or DVD. You know, video. Why did I say video? Videotapes hasn't been around for years, but
well, video formats.
Home video formats. Collect your home video library. Yeah, I don't know what that was.
That was the king of cartoons.
It's the wine talking to me. Okay, so what I was trying to say is, there is a theatrical cut, there is an unrated cut, mm-hmm. and then there's a director's cut. Because after the movie was test screened for audiences, they had another director come in and film some additional scenes, which still are funny, aren't with the director's cut. I really want to see. It's like a lot darker in tone and takes out some of the fuzziness in there. Because it's a lot of its relationship between Bad Santa, played by Billy Bob Thornton,
cuts through the
and
treacle.
A kid. Yeah, cuts through some of the treacle. And the director of this, Bad Santa, is one of my favorites, although he hasn't directed a whole lot of movies, but they've been pretty good. Terry Zwigoff, who one of his early works was a documentary called Crumb about the comic artist, or Crumb.
Cool.
And I'm trying to think. He did Ghost World, which is also a movie based off a comic. So he's done a lot of very interesting, very quirky, kind of darker comedies.
Cool.
And Bad Santa, I'd really enjoy. Not appropriate to watch with little kids, but who am I to say? If you have kids, you know, it's up to the parent to decide what the kid should watch. Even then, you can't control it 100%.
Well, actually, are there? Can you think of any other Christmas movies that aren't nice or family-friendly?
That are, I guess, subversive or more adult?
Well, they don't have to be subversive, but they're just not something you want to
show.
You're
looking on a sequel cast page. We brought up this topic. Are there holiday movies the listeners like? And listener Glenn Hewitt said, they talked about, you know, Lethal Weapon and Die Hard 1 and 2. Well, they are set at Christmas after all, he says, which I never thought about. And we've covered, coincidentally, Lethal Weapon and Die Hard franchises at sequelcast.com on the Sequel Cast show.
I wouldn't call them Christmas. Well, I wouldn't necessarily call them Christmas movies because they really mainly just use Christmas as a vague backdrop, except for the original Die Hard. I would count that as a Christmas movie. It's not a coincidence that the film takes place at a Christmas party. It really uses that time.
Isn't Die Hard 2 also at Christmas in the airport?
Yeah, but like once you're done with the whole, aren't airports crazy during the holidays?
Yeah.
Then that is completely forgotten.
I think that, you know, if you're trying to throw an action movie into your holiday movie mix, you know, the original Die Hard isn't a bad choice. Lethal Weapon, there is some Christmas stuff towards the end. I remember them having a Christmas tree at Murtaugh's house, you know, where there was the final showdown between Gary Busey and Mel Gibson and all that stuff. There's even this scene early on in Lethal Weapon where they're getting the Christmas trees. So, this is an interesting Christmas movie listener Glenn Hewitt posted at our Facebook page at facebook.com/sequelcast. He likes to, his brother drags out every year Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, which you just talked about.
Yeah.
But have you watched that movie straight, like without the Mystery Science Theater?
Yes, I watched it straight all the way through once.
In one sitting?
In one sitting. It really helps to have people joking about the movie.
Yeah,
because it really is on its own, just kind of an awkward relic of the kiddie film era.
You were talking about before the show, Thrasher. So much of this holiday stuff, they aren't movies really, but they're these TV specials. There used to always be these animated specials, and I think of some of the Rankin and Bass things, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is one I've seen several times growing up off a beat up videotape bootleg off a TV. And it's the music is really charming, the way they move is really charming, and you used to see stop motion stuff, it used to be a lot more common, you know, and Rankin Bass pushed that especially. And it does make me wish that Rankin Bass would have done The Hobbit as a stop motion instead of as a 2D animated cartoon.
That would be an interesting interpretation of The Hobbit. They, and I guess like the Rankin Bass did so many Christmas specials, exploring and also creating like mythologies and backstories for Santa Claus, Jack Frost. I believe they have multiple specials telling the origin of Santa Claus. Santa Claus is Coming to Town being one, The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus, based on the Frank L. Baum book, which is an amazing pagan Santa Claus, and it's so grim and dark, because, like, unlike all other Christmas specials, The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus begins with a dirge of this, like, dour, all-male chorus singing about the burden of life unending. It's really great. But as these went on, though, they did really start to have to stretch to keep, you know, making new Christmas specials. The weirdest one being The Leprechaun's Christmas Gold. Because when you think of leprechauns, you think of a completely different holiday. You don't think of Christmas, but lo and behold, they came up with a Christmas special about a leprechaun and a banshee in ancient
Was it a
Ireland.
Stop motion or a cartoon?
Yes,
oh, okay,
was.
Huh. I guess there's a lot of those I've missed. I'm just used to the ones they do on TV year after year. I mean,
it used to be in the 90s when networks, particularly the Family Channel, started creating massive blocks of holiday entertainment. They used to blow through pretty much every Christmas special that Rankin Bass ever did, but around the time the millennium turned over, they kind of limited it to about the five most iconic ones and let the more obscure ones slip away, which is a real shame because I really do value the craziness of some of the more obscure
ones.
They've
done a good job of releasing most of those on DVD or Blu-ray over the years. One I loved a lot as a kid was Will Vinton's A Claymation Christmas Celebration featuring the California Raisins.
Oh, that used to be one of my family's traditional viewings until we lost our Betamax tape.
Oh, Betamax, wow.
We had it.
My family
Betamax.
Was just a VHS. They lucked out and picked the winner, as it says. Now, with Betamax, did you notice the increase in quality, even though, you know, nothing was high definition, so to speak, back then?
I notice it now. Mm. I didn't at the time. It was just whatever tape.
Have you seen the Betamax recently, just to stack it against a VHS?
Yeah, there's a shop just outside of Lexington, Pops Resale. Hmm. They have a little bit of everything, but they have old electronics and recording equipment, and they did have a Betamax and a few tapes there.
Interesting.
They also sell 8-track.
Huh. The Claymation Christmas Celebration from Will Vinton, even though it's only 24 minutes long, has a lot of different styles in there. There's a really good piece that I think it's like a Joy to the World, where it's done with like stained glass looking stuff on there.
Well, there's, if I remember correctly, their version of Joy to the World, it's a much hipper version of Joy to the World. Talk about joy. Like, it has this undercurrent, you know, talk about joy. And I don't know the name of the technique, but while it's done stop motion, it's like they're not using figures with clay. They're like almost painting with clay and creating these changing images and kind of cosmic explosive landscapes.
And that is sort of the frame story that the special is hosted by these two dinosaurs. One that appears to be like a flamboyant takeoff on Al Roker is how I took it. You got the
the Triceratops with glasses who's a little overweight and talks like this. I told you it was a sheep shearing song.
Here we come a waffling. Yeah, it's they just
the running gag of people coming by and singing the song improperly, and then the other host being a very very sophisticated Tyrannosaurus.
And the contrast was a lot of fun there.
Oh, yes. And he talks like Thurston Howell the Third for some reason. Gathering around the tree to open presents. But I mean, it has so many great segments, and because they vary the style, they each really stand out. And of course, you know, everyone's, the big climax is the California Raisins doing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which I don't know if anyone remembers that today, but the California Raisin Producers Association had a series of pro-raisin ads that Will Vinton directed with the California Raisins, and they became so big, they released actual albums, they had multiple
There's a
specials.
Saturday morning cartoon series.
Yeah, which is like, if you're going to do it, just do stop motion. No one wants to see stop motion figures done in cell.
But yet they did that several times. Well, not stop motion, but I'm thinking more of like Muppet Babies or Fraggle Rock, where you had, they did things that were popular in one form and just did it as a 2D cartoon because it was cheaper.
True, true. But with the Will Vinton Christmas special, so like that's really how they, at the time, I remember when this premiered, and that's really the way they sold it as, and the California Raisins! They practically sold it as the California Raisins Christmas special, even though they're only there for the very end. But the two other segments that really stand out, they all stand out, but the two that are sticking in my mind is they have a version of the Three Wise Men where it's it is the Three Wise Men riding on camels and they're really singing very mournful, very slow, as we expect.
Three kings. Yeah.
Like, but then every time they get to the chorus, the camera angles down to their camels and the camels are kind of like. They're kind of like part doo-wop group, part rap pack, and sing a really jazzy "Star of Wonder, Star of Light." And then the other one is their version of "Carol of the Bells," where it's literally a choir of bells who hit themselves with mallets to make their tone. And there's one bell that keeps fucking it up, and it does a great payoff.
Another sort of more recent holiday movie I like that I've only seen once, but I cut it in the theaters. Butters the Cat, get out of the way of my fucking camera. Jesus. That's a...
Can you put your pets in another room? That's what I do.
No, because then they'll be terrorized by the dog. Hey, Butters, say hi. You're on Sequel Cast Special. Okay. Ugh. Anyway, a more recent film I enjoy that's holiday-themed is Harold and Kumar 3. A very Harold and Kumar Christmas. Have you seen this one?
Yeah. Yes, I saw that in the theaters last year.
I think it surprisingly works both as a Harold and Kumar movie and as a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it. And I love seeing Danny Trejo playing a more down-to-earth character.
It's one of the few uses of 3D, and anytime I've seen 3D, it's only been in comedies where I think it's really been effective in theaters, and I'm talking about Jackass 3D and the very Harold and Kumar Christmas 3D. If you like Harold and Kumar, you can skip right to the Christmas one, and you can skip Guantanamo Bay, because that one's not as funny.
So if you like
if you only
these
have
movies,
time for two of them,
the first
if you only have time for two of them, skip number two and watch one and three. If you have time for one, watch number one. But if you got a little bit of time at the end, you can fit number three in there. Just watch some of it. So many of the jokes pander to that it's 3D, knowing that 3D is just a silly gimmick, that watching it in 2D, I don't know if it would be like, if it would still be as funny?
No, well, you know what? I've seen it in 2D, and the thing that I like about seeing it in 2D is it really heightens how gimmicky 3D actually is, because there's all these sort of 3D gimmick shots, which are only funnier in 2D.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like when they throw the egg at Harold, and like they do that weird like Matrix pan around the egg, seeing that done in 2D when it's clearly supposed to be an elaborate 3D effect shot just makes it so much
I think
better.
Of that when I see commercials where it's like catch Judge Dredd and catch Dredd 3D, Judge Dredd 3D, and you see these shots of people falling through windows and glass flying everywhere, and you're like, well, I bet that would be cool in 3D, but you're showing this on a I'm watching this anyway on my 2D television or on my computer screen that can't do 3D. What's the point?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but briefly when 3D first started to become a real thing again, and it showed up in a lot of horror movies, they would, in a lot of commercials, they would show a theater screen and have like a bad sort of effect of something coming out of the movie screen.
Oh my God, it's a knife! That sort of thing. It's, holiday movies.
Oh, hey.
Yes, go on.
This is an obscure one. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you ever seen Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas?
No, but that was done by the Jim Henson Company, right?
Yes, it is so good.
I've heard wonderful things. Is that with John Denver?
He may have composed some of the music for it. I don't think he's
okay.
in it. Well, I mean, it's all Muppeteers. There's no humans.
But does it have the like Kermit and Miss Piggy and the standard Muppets?
Kermit appears in like a brief host segment, but it's all original Muppets that all have a very distinct look. I mean, they're clearly Muppets, but they're made to look much more like accurate representations of the animals they're supposed to be.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just a really, you know, beautiful story. And one of the things that I love the most about it is the big sort of conflict that the special keeps building to. And if you haven't seen it, see it now, then come back. Good. Are we done? Excellent. They lose. It's a Christmas special where the people who need the prize money lose the competition. And it's really all sort of a life goes on, keep hope, you'll find a way sort of message. Because at the end, it's still like, even though they lose, they don't get what they want, and Christmas isn't saved, their lives do improve. It's so amazing.
I do remember a TV movie with the Muppets called A Muppet Family Christmas from 1987, where it's about them going to see Fozzie the Bear's family. And because of music rights, the video releases leave out musical numbers and different scenes from the film in the U.S. So I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but I recall that one. And also I recall a TV one that was actually based off a record, the Scrooge Christmas Carol with Scrooge McDuck.
Oh yeah, the Mickey. I think it's usually goes under
Mickey's Christmas Carol. That's it.
That's
yeah.
Another good retelling.
And that originally was just a record album, and then it did so well, and they thought it was such a fun story, and they added upon it and made it a made for TV special with really good animation for television.
Yeah, it's really well done, and it's pretty faithful to the original Dickens. It uses the Disney characters in a good ways, and I like that the darkness is there. I mean, the part with Pete as the ghost of Christmas Future, and you don't even realize it's Pete until the end of his segment. It really is dark, and it really is terrifying, and it really gets you thinking about death and how you're going to be remembered after you pass.
Had you seen that Christmas Carol motion capture animated film by Robert Zemeckis that came out a few years ago?
Oh, no, I
caught some
of that,
and that's not bad. It's fairly close to the novel. The tone is dark in a lot of places, and Jim Carrey plays a lot of parts. You have a lot of actors playing different parts. And that's a real tricky story to do because that's been filmed so many times, whether it's in TV specials or movies, to make it really stand out.
Oh, actually, here's another one. The Babes in Toyland with Drew Barrymore, Keanu Reeves, and that one guy from Empty Nest.
I have not seen that one. No.
Never? That is the most overplayed Christmas special. It is on every network. In December, if you go through the cable dial, that movie is on somewhere. It doesn't matter what time of day it is.
Is it a cartoon? Is it?
No, it's live action.
Huh.
Well, let me put it this way. It's not all that.
Yeah.
Like you don't even you can't even tell it's a Christmas special, and it's sort of like it's sort of like we've got access to an amusement park and these actors. What the hell can we shoot here? Babes in Toyland. Okay. Like, it's all these little parts that shouldn't work, but it kind of works together, but doesn't quite.
Okay. I've seen a theatrical Babes in Toyland movie from, like, the 70s or something, or the 60s, but I have not seen that one.
Oh, is it the one with Ed Wynn?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I have no idea what Babes in Toyland actually is. I'm assuming there's a prime piece of source material that I'm missing, but I've never seen any two versions that bared any resemblance to each other. But yeah, I guess the thing that the thing that you should see it for is it has a segment at the near the beginning where Drew Barrymore, Keanu Reeves, and two other people are driving in a car singing a song about how great Cincinnati is.
Huh.
And it's just like the Cincy was so natty. It's like all this old slang kind of thrown together into a song.
Oh, the original Babes in Toyland was an operetta. From first produced in the early 1900s. The original production was in Chicago in 1903 on stage.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, it's had several film adaptations.
Like, immediately, I now want to see, like, a staging of the original operetta. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, now that'd be interesting. Huh. I'm looking, you're talking about this 86 version. Okay.
Oh, holy crap. Here's one we may have to look for. As it turns out, there's a Home Alone 5 that is coming out now.
Yeah, with Malcolm McDowell as one of the robbers.
Malcolm McDowell!
Clockwork Orange himself.
Well, I certainly hope there's a bit of the ultra-violence.
Hello, little boy. We're going to steal everything from your... That doesn't sound like Malcolm McDowell at all. Good.
No, that's like that's some sort of cockney.
That's a Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins. Yeah.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, little boy. We're gonna break into your house, and then we're going to.
Yeah, apparently it premiered a few days ago. Apparently, we need to track this down and do a special episode to make our. To make our coverage of the Home Alone franchise complete.
Well, our Home Alone 4 episode also got in the toilet because that recording got garbled, lost a time.
Well, we can do both. We can do a back to back Home Alone 4 and 5 double feature.
Oh, I'll think about it.
And we pass the savings on to you.
Yeah. Boy, Malcolm McDowell, he's in a lot of movies. He likes to work, or he likes the money, or one of those. So,
why do you?
There's nothing wrong with someone that loves to work, that likes to be constantly be acting in things, regardless of the quality.
Oh no! Always be acting. Yeah. ABA. But here's something, because we really have been talking an awful lot about Christmas, but that isn't the only holiday going on. There's around this time. There's Thanksgiving. There's Yule. There's Kwanzaa. There's Hanukkah.
One that kind of blends, you know. Hanukkah and Christmas is the South Park Christmas episode from the first season, where it has a lot of songs in there, as the South Park holiday episodes often do. But you get the number by Kyle Broflowski. It's hard to be a Jew on Christmas, and it's a real feeling. I mean, I'm not Jewish, but I had some friends in high school that were, and I've known people that. Have been Jewish, or not have been, are Jewish. And that's a real, you know, point that so much is concentrated on Christmas that they don't treat the other holidays with as much recognition. You don't get as many Hanukkah albums as Christmas albums.
Well, they don't get as much play, but I do feel that that does preserve the dignity of the other holidays. As much as it pains me to say this, I think Christmas is a holiday with no dignity.
What way?
Well, it's just splattered all over everything for so long. Why do I have to be prepping for this? Why I feel like I'm expected to prep for this holiday for 3 months in all the wrong ways. And that anything having to do with family or Jesus or the gift of oneself, it's so lost in this screeching commercial mess.
Yeah, certainly the religious aspects of religious aspects of Christian of a Christmas, you know, are not the focus. And you know, on the other hand, you get the thing too of people that consider themselves churchgoers, but they only go on Christmas and Easter. You know, they only go on two holidays. And it's like, well, that's not. I don't know. That's a whole separate issue with. Religion.
But you were talking about the song. It's hard to be
a Jew on Christmas.
Jew on
from
Christmas.
The South Park. Yeah.
Growing Growing up, I actually had the opposite. Oh. Growing up, when I was about, like, I think, like, between 5 and 7, just because, you know, of you know, where we lived and who my parents worked with and just, you know, what the demographic of my
It's hard
my
to be a goyim
like,
on Hanukkah.
I actually had... Yeah. Well, yeah, I had a lot of Jewish friends, possibly more Jewish friends than Christian friends or friends of other backgrounds. And I remember going through a brief period where, like, what? Why aren't we celebrating Hanukkah? What's going on?
I do remember having a
I felt I was really missing out on something important.
You know, when you mentioned that, it does. I did have a friend growing up when I was really young, and he was, I think, like his dad was. His mom was Jewish and his dad wasn't, or it might have been the other way around. So he celebrated both Christmas and Hanukkah. And he's like, see, look, I get all these presents constantly throughout the month of December. So I was like, wow, that's so cool. I was like in first grade. I'm like, oh, that's amazing. But
yeah, like, what are some other, like, are there any other holiday movies or specials that, that deal with other holidays at this time that aren't necessarily Christmas?
One that my family watches sometimes is Home for the Holidays, which focuses on Thanksgiving. And it's directed and stars Jodie Foster. And Robert Downey Jr. is also in it, is kind of a crazy loose cannon brother. And it's not a movie. It has some moments that are funny. Like it's not fall down laughing, but the humor is a bit more subtle. It's not all slapstick. You get some emotional content on there.
Well, I guess my other one is like it's on the subject of Thanksgiving. Well, first, a holiday tradition, a Thanksgiving tradition that I really feel should come back is Turkey Day, which is when Comedy Central used to play 24 hours of Mystery Science Theater 3000 with new host segments. That was great. They need to bring that back, and it would always begin and end with an all new episode, which is just a, you know, a real treat if you were a fan. I want that to come back somewhere somehow. But and I will bring this one up only because I absolutely despise it. The Buttons and Rusty Thanksgiving special.
I have no idea what that is.
Buttons, it's a relic of the 60s and 70s. Buttons and Rusty are a fox and a bear that pretty much existed only to appear in terrible holiday specials. And just the animation is poor, the acting is poor, the narrative is poor, and yet it still shows up. I think only the Thanksgiving special shows up at all anymore. You used to be able to catch the Easter special and the Christmas special, and I think they did one other one. But yeah, it's just nothing. It is just an hour of nothing. And it's just so bland and nothing's going on. It is anti-entertainment is what it is. And yet I still see it on and it's just filler really.
I'm thinking of Thanksgiving things. I remember watching the TV special Garfield's Thanksgiving.
Oh,
yeah, based on, you know, it was around the same time. It might have even been before the Garfield and Friends animated series. I don't.
Yes, it was.
Maybe like a year or two before. And I remember it being surprisingly melancholy.
Well, are you sure you're not thinking of the Christmas one?
Which is the one where doesn't John have, like, the human owner of the Garfield, the cat, Noddy, the dog. Isn't there one where, like, he has a family member that dies? Is that the Christmas one, or am I...
If I remember correctly, the Christmas one, there's an undercurrent in it that his father has passed away and that his mother or grandmother... It's hard to place the ages of some of these characters, but this older woman hasn't quite reconciled with it. And in the course of Garfield trying to find his... being a greedy bastard and trying to find his Christmas presents, he finds all these old love letters... that the father wrote for the mother back when they were courting, possibly in the Second World War, and it really brings the family together when these letters are.
You're
shown
right. That
to
is
her.
The Christmas, not the Thanksgiving one.
And I gotta say, like that, I like. Yeah. I like. That's a really important thing. That kind of melancholy. It's melancholy, and then it turns because you can remember the good times.
Yeah. No. I got the Christmas and Thanksgiving one confused. Growing up, I did watch a lot of the Charlie Brown, the Peanuts holiday specials.
Oh, I love those. That Christmas special is gold.
And I was at a video store, and they were playing on the TV in the store the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. But nothing can match the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
It's so good, and it's so short, you don't realize that it's barely 20 minutes long, but it's so powerful in the time that it has.
Yeah, definitely. You know, this is a sequel cast special, and on the sister show, the sequel cast, we talk about sequels. One sequel that's holiday-themed where the original really wasn't was Beauty and the Beast, The Enchanted Christmas, a direct-to-video sequel to the Disney cartoon Beauty and the Beast, in which... So you've seen the Disney Beauty and the Beast, right? Yeah.
Yes,
but have
yes,
you seen
have.
This one I'm talking about? Enchanted Christmas.
No, I tend to avoid the generally speaking, I avoid.
So this one isn't a sequel, it's an interquel, because it takes place during Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yes.
So there's a montage where Belle is at the castle with the Beast, and it's kind of like Christmas time, it's winter time, and they're throwing snowballs at each other.
Oh.
It takes place during that period.
Oh, yes, there's something there that wasn't there before. It's that part.
Yeah, during the montage, during the song, is when this movie takes place. So it's kind of genius as far as doing a direct-to-video sequel in that fashion, because all the talking pots and pans and teacups are still teacups, right? You know, they're not humans. And in it, they introduce a character, you know, that is not in the film, that
is it
played by
Tim
Curry? And he plays an evil organ. Not that kind of organ, the musical kind.
Oh, I think it is, Matt. It's like it's Forte the
evil organ. He has his own song. And the song, and he's an all CG character in this 2D animated cartoon with not very good CG, and he kind of brings out the darkness in the Beast as he plays his music.
Oh, and doesn't it have Bernadette Peters as a Christmas
organ? It certainly does. You know, it's not very good,
Angelique.
But the animation, as some of this initial Disney direct-to-video sequel stuff, this was in 97, is a little bit better than you would expect. And they do have a lot of the same voices from the cartoon and stuff, so that's kind of fun.
Cool. Now, that brings a really good. Does Forte survive the movie, or is he one of those Disney characters that just kind of dies?
He dies. The Beast rips the keyboard off of Forte the organ, and Forte collapses.
So the Beast commits murder.
Yes, he commits murder of a saucy voiced instrument, a saucily voiced instrument.
Now, do you think that like when the curse is broken in Beauty and the Beast, the broken organ parts turn into a pile of bones and rotting flesh?
Yeah, I don't know. There is a sequence in the Beauty and the Beast Enchanted Christmas that's sort of funny that does kind of shows the origin of the organ character, and that he used to be a butler or something for the prince before he became the Beast, and they draw the butler to look just like Tim Curry, which is funny.
You know, it's so weird because everyone else in the movie, it kind of makes sense what like appliance or object they turn into. Shouldn't a butler turn into like a dumbwaiter or something?
Well, I think it was because he was known in the prince's castle as having the biggest organ in the land, so he became what he was most known for, an organ of a musical type. So that's my terrible attempt at humor. Okay, so we have a little bit more time to touch on some more holiday movies in the sequel cast special. What is one that you enjoy, one that you want to see that you haven't seen yet, that you've heard a lot about?
Oh, crud. You know, I don't know if I can really think of any. In many ways, holiday entertainments is something that I kind of try to avoid in one way because there's just so much oversaturation of that kind of thing this time of year, and also because there's just so many bad things, like let's just throw Christmas on something. Like there are a lot of really tortured Christmas specials, such as the Aliens First Christmas, which has nothing to do with the Ridley Scott film. It's just this improbable sci-fi animated Christmas special. Which that alone raises a lot of interesting theological questions if you're trying to sort of bring a religious holiday to an alien planet. What that brings up a lot of questions about God and the nature of the universe. And also, actually, I'm going to save this. There's something else I'm going to go into, but I'm going to save that for last. So All I can say is this. I'm looking forward to seeing Scrooged again. Scrooge is one of my favorite Christmas movies.
Yeah, you know, listener, Glenn Hewitt on our Facebook page, facebook.com/sequelcast, mentioned Scrooge, and I haven't seen that since I was 10 years old, or in about like 20 years. So I really need to see that again. I do like Bill Murray. It's one of those films, I understand the original screenplay was a lot darker in tone, but they kind of softened it up as they filmed it.
Freezing to death in the sewers, that's the softened up
Yeah,
version.
Apparently so. I think of the holidays and sort of franchises. I've never seen Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh.
But, yeah.
You know, actually, I haven't either. I actually bought a bootleg of that at Scarefest in this past October, and it turns out the disc was corrupt.
That stinks.
That's the one snag with bootlegs. Every now and then you'll get a bum.
That can happen with retail discs too sometimes, but less often than with bootlegs.
But there's more of a way to get your
money back. No, that's true. I think of
with bootlegs, it can sometimes be tricky. Although I tell you what, it is it's one of my my girlfriend Sarah's holiday traditions is watching the horror comedy Santa's Sleigh.
I saw that a few years ago at a party. That was very funny with Bill Goldberg. Yeah,
as Santa, where it turns out that we've only been getting half the story about Santa. He's actually Satan's son, and has been under a guise which forces him to do good on Christmas night, but that the 1,000-year time limit on the guise has finally lapsed, and he's ready to be an evil son of a bitch again.
Yeah, the conditions under which I saw that film were pretty bizarre. It was at a party where it's kind of the guys were having a weekend out at this guy's house, and he loaded up a file on it. He had his computer hooked up to the TV and loaded up a file called, like, XXX Ayumi Mimikumi's Magical Adventure. And he's like, this one's really good, fellas.
Oh, wow. I want to
So everyone's thinking he's going to put on a porn with a group of guys. That's sort of weird, but that could be funny. Okay. And he puts it on, and it's Santa's Sleigh. So, like, the movie's beginning, you're like, what? Okay. Oh, is this going to be the porn part? Is this going to be the porn part? And then you see the violent killings in the title of the film, and you're like, oh, of course. He was doing the old switcheroo, and that was pretty funny. You think of Christmas franchises, just to end things off, there's the Tim Allen Santa Claus trilogy.
I've only seen
the first, in which Santa Claus accidentally commits suicide on the job, and Tim Allen has to take over. I don't like Tim Allen very much. Judge Reinhold is in it. He has a Oscar Mayer weenie whistle that he puts in his mouth and blows. And that's all I remember about that movie.
Wow.
Did you ever see those at all? I'm curious to see the third one that has Martin Short as Jack Frost.
I'm sure I've seen part of the first one, but I think that's it. I've never really sat down and watched it. I know it has been suggested that we cover series at some point. Yep.
Who suggested it?
I was a viewer, although it was last year, I think. I don't recall. I don't recall the viewer's name. If you dig through our Facebook feed, you'll probably find it.
Go to facebook.com/sequelcast. Very good.
Yep. There is something I'd like to bring up, just as far as we're talking about fucked up, like transcendently bad and fucked up Christmas specials that are still bad. The He-Man She-Ra Christmas special is a thing to behold.
Crossover?
Yep, if there is a Christmas special that misses the mark in every conceivable way, it's the He-Man She-Ra.
Which
Christmas
universe
special.
Did it take place in?
No, they both take place in the same universe, but due to Orko messing with an experimental spy drone, two children from Earth get stuck on Eternia.
Oh.
During Christmas. Ugh. And it has a terrible holiday song that is just with the horribly animated imagery that goes with it. Horribly animated all around. Referenced characters that we never see again in those series. Skeletor going, Christmas? What is Christmas?
Yeah.
And and like Transformer ripoffs that don't work because design-wise they make no sense and they have no personality. It's so terrible. I really think we should do a sequel commentary on it.
That sounds terrible.
It is hard to watch. That's why we need to improve it. Like I said, I don't like bad-mouthing other people's work, but the He-Man She-Ra Christmas special misses the mark in every possible way. And yet, I guess it has its own weird beauty, because if you were able to miss a bullseye but somehow make a perfect circle around the bullseye with all your misses, that would still be kind of an achievement.
Hmm. I think, we've done a good job talking about holiday movies on the sequel cast special. Why don't we close out with this little thing to think about. Is there, a lot of these Christmas specials or movies have a song and dance number, a musical number. Is there one that sort of sticks out to you as being a favorite? It doesn't have to come from a holiday movie, but it could be a holiday-related song from a movie or a TV special.
I guess I really like that It Feels Like Christmas number from The Muppets Christmas Carol.
What about it?
I just really like it. It has just a good sound to it. I like the way Frank Oz sings it. It's just I like the sort of the litany of pleasant seasonal things that is that song.
I always think of the song "It's Christmas in Heaven" from Monty Python's Meaning of Life.
Oh, that's
performed
brilliant.
By Graham Chapman. Now that's not a Christmas movie, but it's a weird, in a movie full of non sequiturs. It's one of the strangest out of nowhere.
No, it's not out of nowhere. It's about the way commercialism.
Yeah.
And aspirational material expectations have infiltrated our spirituality.
Well, I think I will close this.
It's a very
deep
song.
I'll close this episode of Sequel Cast Special by singing a small bit in my terrible singing voice of Christmas from Heaven.
Singing it for all of you
listeners. In the style of how it's done in the film, where it references the sequel. It's Christmas in Heaven. There's great films on TV. The Sound of Music twice an hour and Jaws 1, 2, and 3. There's gifts for all the family. There's toiletries and trains. There's Sony Walkman headphone sets and the latest video games.
Yeah, it's like, I love it. It's like the three magi. The
latest video games. Very good.
And I also love the overblown American entertainer accent that Graham Chapman does. Where he's like, it's not the sound. It's the Sound of Music twice an hour.
Yeah.
Like his jaw doesn't ever seem to move.
And when I first didn't catch that was Graham Chapman at first, because he's so cleaned up and in a suit and everything.
He's left so much spray.
Yeah, that too. All right, well, this has been...
I like It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Fishmen by the HPLHS.
Is that a good one?
Yeah. It's beginning to look a lot like fishmen. Everywhere I turn... Everywhere I go, you can dynamite Devil Reef, but it'll bring no relief. Yahanath Lay lies deeper than they know. It's really good, you know.
Well, I think that's enough.
Creepin', they croakin', okay. Their presence provokes a profound desire to flee. Their eyes never blinkin', quite frankly, they stink like a carcass washed out of the sea. I wish I'd heard the warnings of that crazy drunken man to avoid the town of Innsmouth and Old Marsh's deep one clan.
Very good. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here in the sequel cast special on...
We sure done did a lot of John about
on holiday
Christmas
movies. So, thanks for listening, and if you're watching this on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/sequelcast, thanks for listening. And, you know, check out our other shows too, Sequelcast and Sequel Commentary over at sequelcast.com. And if you like the show, just consider donating. We have a donate button right on there, really nice and easy via PayPal, except, you know, really easy to use. Sequelcast, Sequel Commentary, and Sequelcast Special. It all costs money, so every little bit helps cover some of that. It would be nice.
It is better to give than to receive, so prove that you're better than us by giving us money.
Very good. As John Lovitz said on The Critic...
John Lovitz.
Buy my book. Buy my book.
Buy my book.
We don't have a book. We have nothing. But if you don't want to buy something...
That's project number three after the concept
album.
Yeah,
but you know, if you don't want to buy something SequelCast related, and this is SequelCast special, you can go to SequelCast.com, and we have links to our t-shirts on Cafe Press. You can get t-shirts, whiskey flask, or a flask for whatever you choose, I guess, mouse pads, all sorts of fun stuff at SequelCast.com. For,
I guess it really is defined by what you put in it, not what it's intended that you put in it.
And so what you put in it and how it comes out. That's disgusting.
Much like life.
It's very touching. For a SequelCast special, this is Matt.
And this is Thrasher.
Saying,
bah humbug.
Tim Curry is the greatest organ of them all.
Yes! Uncut!
Okay. It always floats down here, Timmy. Beep, beep.
We all float in eggnog.
Do your beep, beep.
No. Beep, beep.
Yeah, very good. Good night. That was fun. SequelCast Special is a Hipster Goblin production.